America Radio News. I'm Bill Crowley. Iraqi police say militiamen have broken into a prison in Basra and hauled out 12 inmates, shooting them and killing them. Authorities say the shootings were retribution for an insurgent rebel bomb attack inside one of Iraq's holiest Shiite shrines. The Iraqi Islamic Party says more than 90 Sunni mosques have been the targets of Shiite anger. The Sunni political group says at least 19 people, including three Sunni clerics, were killed in the reprisal attacks that followed. Meantime, leaders on both sides are calling for calm. Many Shiites lashed out at the U.S. as being partly to blame. George Bush says America will help to restore the mosque in Samarra. The blast destroyed the mosque's golden dome of spending the $100 billion in storm relief money. This is Air America Radio News.
good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Air America Radio. How you doing tonight? Hell of a day, huh? Did you watch the news today? Oh, Jesus. We're going to be joined in about 25 minutes, 30 minutes by David Ray Griffin, Professor David Ray Griffin. He'll join us tonight to discuss his book, The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11, and also his other book that has to do with the, I think it's Omissions and Commission, Omissions by the 9/11 Commission or something. Anyway, we're going to be talking to him this evening. This will be my first exposure to David Ray Griffin. I have not seen the videos that you all have told me to see. I've not seen the PBS special. I've not read his books. So this will be an experience for me. I'll be coming at this from the standpoint of someone who is not familiar, except secondhand, with David Ray Griffin's writings. So that should make it interesting, I think. He is the professor emeritus at the Claremont School of Theology in California. He taught there, as you know, for over 30 years, retired in 2004, co-director of the Center for Process Studies, and on and on and on and on. So we will get to Professor Griffin later on this evening. The ports thing, the sale of the ports to the United Arab Emirates, or at least the management of the ports, I should say, It's obviously still in the news. It became the lead story today on most of the newscasts, most of the network newscasts. I thought, what's his name on CNN? Used to have the business show. Lou Dobbs. I thought Lou Dobbs was going to have a stroke tonight. I think... I think some of the right wingers that are on television are having strokes because they haven't been given instructions on the right wing people on radio and television. They haven't been given instructions yet on how to handle this. Limbaugh is still spinning because he's high and stoned, and I understand his girlfriend left him. Darren Kagan said enough of this fat pig and walked away, or either that or she couldn't get him to share. Hannity doesn't know whether to pee his pants or go blind because nobody's told him what to do. So all these right-wing pundits are kind of spinning around, and it's great fun to watch. I just have to say, it's great fun to watch, regardless of what the outcome is. It's just great fun to watch these pigs chase each other's tails. I have to admit, I love it. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Over the was it last Saturday, Friday or Saturday? I was off Friday, and it was either Friday or Saturday. I forgot to mention this the other night. Harry Whittington, the guy that Dick Cheney gunned down in a drunken haze, Whittington emerged from the hospital looking like somebody who had been shot all over the right side of his face and his neck, and apologized. He apologized to Cheney. His statement was, quote, "My family and I are deeply sorry for everything Vice President Cheney and his family have had to deal with. We hope that he will continue to come to Texas and seek the relaxation that he deserves," end quote. The only relaxation Cheney deserves is a dirt nap. Come on. Cheney deserves relaxation. Yeah, okay. Pisser. The devil is waiting for you, Cheney. You'll have your relaxation in hell. If you believe that nonsense, and I think Cheney did. I don't know. I really don't care. But the fact that Harry Whittington wound up apologizing to Cheney, that is so Adolf Hitler-like. I mean, it is, isn't it? It is so Hitler-like. The whole Hitler era. I was watching something the other day when I was dealing with whatever that little virus was I had. It was like a two-hour special on Eva Braun, Hitler's girlfriend. And, I immediately thought about Darren Kagan. But aside from that, all these home videos, home movies, it was on the History Channel, as all of the Hitler stuff usually is. Or maybe it was A&E, I don't know. But it was very interesting because in the course of discussing Eva Braun's relationship with Hitler and who she was and all the stuff about that you just always wanted to know about Eva Braun and just never knew where to go to find the information, there it all was. But in the course of revealing all this information, other aspects of Hitler's weird social life, such as it was, or private life, or his interactions with people, how all that worked. And of course, everybody was, you know, obviously just terrified of him. He was a demon who somehow escaped from some vomitous imaginary hell someplace and walked the earth for a while with his crime family. But the people who felt that they had done anything to draw attention to the Fuhrer or to his honey, did the same thing that Harry Whittington did with Cheney, apologized for whatever discomfort, even though the victim, you know, these people are victims, and they apologize. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. Did my German Shepherd get in the way of your gun, and my dog splattered its body all over one of your slugs? I am so sorry. Did the side of my Herr Hitler, the side of my face and my chest and my heart get in the way of your drunken shot at the quail, Herr Cheney? Oh, I'm so sorry. I and my family apologize deeply, profoundly. I don't know what to say, Mr. Cheney. We are just so apologetic about what happened. I mean, this is obscene. And this putrid half-human Dick Cheney okay. It's about time you apologize. What the hell took you so long? Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? Somebody sent me, where was it? This might have been on Bart Cop. With the new Abu Ghraib torture pictures that just surfaced, you have to wonder when Bush tells us, we do not torture. What am I to do? Am I supposed to believe him or my own lying eyes? How many fingers am I holding up? Yeah, I had that thought too. How can they keep saying we don't torture? I mean, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, it doesn't make any difference. Wherever we operate these torture pits, these hell holes, these cesspools of human feces and vomit and blood and broken bodies and ripped off appendages, I mean, this is what we do now. We are a torture nation. How can this jackass say we don't torture and expect people to... Well, I guess all the Christians in America who still support Bush... either justify the torture. Well, you know what God said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a fool me once won't get fooled here. So, I don't know. How can they believe this? How can any preacher who claims to be preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ stand in the church and in the pulpit on Sunday mornings and advocate support for this monster? Wow. The Nuremberg Accords that we and the Brits and the French and the Germans, and the Russians more or less designed, the Nuremberg Accords declared that the most heinous crime against humanity is an illegal act of aggression against another non-belligerent nation. Exactly what Bush has committed against Iraq. Now, in view of the Nuremberg Accords, we've said this 1,000 times, Bush would be declared a war criminal. He has committed what was described at Nuremberg as one of the most heinous crimes, and he would be required to stand trial for these crimes, war crimes and crimes against humanity. So if we can't impeach this guy, if we can't get that to happen, is there any way that we could urge this corrupt, filthy Congress to uphold the Nuremberg Accords and take appropriate action? Or is our Congress going to continue to ignore all this? Well, you know the answer to that, don't you?
No American will be allowed to torture another human being anywhere in the world.
listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm concerned about my son Jesse's height. He's small for a 15-year-old.
Have you tried Height Max?
What's that?
Height Max is a new height-enhancing supplement that helps 12 to 25-year-olds maximize their growth potential. It's a patented blend of vitamins, herbs, and amino acids, and you don't need a prescription.
How do I order Height Max?
Call them direct at 1-877-GROW-TALL. There is a 30-day risk-free offer going on now.
Ah, that's easy. 1-877-GROW-TALL.
Or buy it on the web at heightmax.com.
Order today and grow taller with Height Max. Height Max is a subsidiary of Sunny Health Nutrition Technology.
Our apologies, but in the interest of bettering the future of your teeth, we're going to resort to a rather unpleasant tactic. Coercion. We will play the sound of someone grinding their teeth at night until somebody out there buys a doctor's night guard. Wear it at night to cushion and save your teeth. Come on. Somebody? There. Thank you, Kelly Kaplan of Paramus, New Jersey, for buying a doctor's night guard and relieving the nightly grind in the oral care section.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. David Ray Griffin will join us in about 15 minutes. This story now that the White House put out late yesterday, I guess it was late yesterday, that Bush didn't know anything about this deal with the UAE-owned port management company. They knew Bush knew nothing about it. According to Scott McClellan, you know, a real an absolute liar. Remember, everything that these thugs say is a lie. Everything. If you start from that premise, then you're pretty much protected. You don't slip into the slime that follows where they go physically, where they go verbally, where they go mentally. It's just a cloud, a smear on the sidewalk, this huge smear of slime. But McClellan said Bush became aware of the deal over the last several days. And then when one of the reporters asked Scott if Bush didn't know about it until it was done deal, McClellan said that's correct. McClellan said this matter did not rise to the presidential level. It did. Jesus Christ. These people have spent 5 years inculcating fear and loathing unlike anything I've seen except that which was directed against black folk in this country. Fear and loathing directed primarily, or not exclusively, against Arab Muslims or Muslim Arabs or however you want to say it. That's what they have spent 5 years doing. Oh, it's been very subtle. It's been very slick. You know, Bush has had his little halal dinners in the White House, inviting all the imams in, and they, well, yeah, you know, we have to be tolerant. You know, all the photo ops have been in place. But these people in the Bush crime family have perfected the slickest, slimiest job of promoting an anti-Arab or anti-Muslim bias in this country. It's incredible. Whereas the anti-black thing in this country, the anti-American thing, had 350 years to fester and burn, and there was never anything subtle about it. It was blatant and in your face and in your heart and in your head. Reverse it, and you have what the Bush crime family has done with Muslims or Arabs or however you want to say that. So Bush now and the thugs around him say, well, you know, why is everybody getting upset? They're our allies in terror. McClellan went on to say that Bush made sure to check with all the cabinet secretaries that are part of this process, or whose agencies or departments are part of the process. McClellan lies again. He says President Bush made sure to check with them, even after this got more attention in the press, to make sure they were comfortable with the decision that was made. Well, wait a second. Is McClellan lying or is Rumsfeld lying? Didn't Rumsfeld say he didn't know about it until this past weekend and the deal was a done deal on the 13th? What does that mean? Does that mean the Department of Defense was left out of the loop? Or does it mean Rumsfeld is a Nazi thug pig killer liar? Or does it mean that Scott McClellan once again demonstrates that he is nothing but a huge wet fart sitting there at the podium answering questions with non-answers? What does it mean, Truth Seeker? McClellan said, quote, and every one of the cabinet secretaries expressed that they were comfortable with this transaction being approved. Okay. So who's lying? They're all lying. But once again, it is just astonishing. What the hell do they tell Bush about? Anything. Is there anything they tell this dumb bastard about? Is there anything? Did they just hand him stuff? Here, sign this. Now, why am I signing? You're signing something that says if you want to use nukes, you can use... Oh, okay. Here, sign this. Why am I signing? This says that you have deep compassion for the Negro... Oh, I'm sorry. For the Americans on that part of the world who were devastated by Katrina. Oh, okay. Here, sign this. Why am I signing? This is an order to wiretap anybody and everybody in the United States illegally at our whim. Oh, okay. Here, sign this. What am I signing? This is a plan to gut every single social program in the country so that we can pay off your campaign supporters and the rich people who really need the money. Oh, okay. Did they tell him anything?
They don't tell him when the vice president of the United States, as much of a thug and a creep and a murderer as he is, they don't even tell Bush when Cheney lays waste to a 78-year-old man with a hunting gun. They don't even tell him that. What do they tell him? Anything?
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
I'm so glad you got tickets to this concert.
Definitely. This guy's put on a killer show.
Great, let's go.
Wait, it's just the open band. Let's get a little stone first. It's crazy strong. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, The Anti-Drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really works.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
a monkey that became president. Man, you know, I was there on the day the monkey came into this world. His face was round and reddish, and his hair was slightly curled. He didn't look too different from the...
Your host for a Prience Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. It's about 26 before the hour. That's from one of our little comedy cuts, I do believe. David Ray Griffin is familiar to most of the people who listen to this program, probably a great deal more so than he is familiar to me. I have been asked repeatedly to have Mr. Griffin or Professor Griffin on as a guest. I've read some of his work, some of his writings. I'm familiar with who he is, and I tend to agree with everything that I have discovered about Professor Griffin so far. However, I do approach this as someone tonight who has not had a chance to speak with Professor Griffin. As you know, he was a professor of philosophy and religion and theology at the Claremont School of Theology in Claremont, California. Retired a couple of years ago. Since his retirement, he has moved his focus from questions of philosophy and religion to one of politics, and specifically the questions around 9/11. Most of you are familiar with his book, The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11. And his most recent book, I believe, is the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. Professor David Ray Griffin joins us now by telephone. Professor Griffin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
I think what I need to do, because most of the people listening right now are extremely familiar with your work, is just move right into it. Let me ask you, how did you become so deeply involved in the official 9/11 narrative?
Well, there are different ways to answer this. One meaning of that question that's quite often asked is, why did a nice theologian get into a place like this?
Right.
And when you think about it, it is a proper question for theologians to deal with, because our task is to deal with the world as a whole and from the perspective of the common good, since our Creator presumably cares about the world as a whole and its survival. And what's going on in the name of 9/11, the imperialistic wars, the neglect of all environmental concerns, and so on, is a threat to the very survival of our planet. So that's a quickie answer to that. As to how I got into it, I had a colleague tell me about a year after 9/11 that it was an inside job, and I asked him for evidence, and he sent me some websites. I looked at them and didn't find the evidence convincing, but a few months later, another colleague sent another website which had Paul Thompson's massive timeline on there, all 200 pages, all derived from mainstream sources that showed there were many, many stories that had been reported, although usually only once, that contradicted the official narrative. So I started looking into it. And once I looked at the evidence and got rid of the assumption that not even the Bush administration would do something so heinous, then I saw the evidence was very strong and thought that it was then incumbent upon me to try to write it up, because even though a lot of people knew a lot more about it than I did, most of them weren't in the position to get anything published. And since I had published quite a few books, I figured maybe I could. And it turned out not to be very easy to find a publisher, but I finally did find brave little Interlink Press.
I want to ask you this, and I've been listening to what your answer was there, but also thinking the best way to frame this question or to phrase this question. My independent study, just on my own, around this issue over the past 5 years has led me to the conclusion that the Bush administration, either actively or passively, were involved in the attack on this country. My inclination is to feel at this point that they were actively involved, perhaps to the point of even engineering the whole event. There is a stronger force inside me, though, that still says no, they were passively involved. which is equally criminal, but not to the extent that I seem to have concluded. So I'm left with kind of a dilemma here, Professor Griffin. So my question to you, my next question would be this. How do people like you or I or anyone else who has come to certain conclusions, how do we prevent this feedback loop from occurring where when we seek proof to justify what the conclusions we've come to, all we're doing is repeating what appears to be evidence. Now, do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not framing the question very well here. How do we escape a kind of a feedback loop? I believe it's true because I believe it's true. How do we escape that?
Yeah, well, some people do claim in the academy that you're not capable of seeing evidence that contradicts your preconceptions.
Right.
And so there are a lot of people who say, well, if you believe that, it's because you belong to the hate America crowd or the hate Bush crowd. Well, as I said, when I first heard this allegation, I said, well, show me the evidence, but I'm very skeptical because I don't think even the Bush administration would do this.
Right.
And then when I looked at the evidence, I saw it was very strong. Now, with regard to those two positions, as you probably know, those have been the two dominant positions in the 9/11 community. Those who mm-hmm. say the Bush administration let it happen, deliberately let it happen, and then those who say no, they went ahead and actively caused it to happen. And for many people, it is more comfortable to believe the passive view, that they
right.
just knew it was coming and let it happen. When you think about it, though, it's not much easier on one's conception of these leaders to
That's
think
true.
They would deliberately let that happen. And then in point of fact, most of the people who originally started with the let it happen view have migrated over to the other view, because when you start looking at the evidence, you see even though there is a lot of evidence that that they knew it was going to happen, but there's also stronger evidence that they knew it was going to happen because they were going to make it happen,
mm-hmm.
and that has to do with just various things that could not have been done by anybody except the administration,
mm-hmm.
Such as letting the flights make it to their targets, the collapse of the towers, which could not have been caused by the airplanes and the ensuing fires alone, and the attack on the Pentagon because of various anomalies about that. So I think most people, when they do finally get over their preconceptions enough to look at the evidence, decide that they not just let it happen but orchestrated it.
I hate the cliche that's entered into the vernacular now, the smoking gun.
Yeah.
I hate that. It sounds like something out of a cheap dime novel from the 40s. But let's use it. There are those.
Actually, we've got smoking towers.
Well, that too. There are those who say that the prima facie evidence of the smoking gun is what happened to the towers, what happened at the Pentagon, what happened in the evidence of what happened in the field in Pennsylvania, and yet I'm still left with a question. Other than those obvious smoking guns, is there something that you've discovered in your research that shows without a doubt that the Bush administration knew 9/11 was likely to happen and did nothing, or made it happen? Something fairly simple to explain over the radio without the visual aids that have become key to this. It's one thing to sit and discuss. This is something else to look at the videos that I've looked at, and they're shocking. They're stunning. They leave no doubt in my mind about what happened, and yet I still got these nagging questions.
Sure. And of course, those three that you mentioned are very big ones. But in my own case for this, I develop what I call a cumulative case, which you see that there are just dozens of facts that don't make any sense if the official story were true, but they all make sense with this alternative theory, which is that the Bush administration, with its Pentagon, of course, engineered the attack. So, you know, and some people will say, well, you know, they'll look at this cumulative argument and say, well, number 35, that's, I can rebut that. That's not real evidence. And that just shows that the whole thing is false because, you know, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link.
Right.
But that's the difference between a deductive argument where if any premise is faulty, then the whole argument fails, and a cumulative argument, because here we have, you know, 35 or 40 independent arguments, and as I said in my book, even if half of them or three-fourths of them turn out to have some other explanation, you still have some very strong evidence, cumulative evidence still, for this. Now, to give one more example, the behavior of Bush and his Secret Service that morning in when they were at Florida in the school.
Right.
And, of course, everybody who has seen Michael Moore's Fahrenheit movie know that Bush was in the classroom when Andy Card came in and allegedly told him that the second tower had been hit. At that point, Bush could no longer dismiss it like he did the first one and say, oh, what a terrible accident. It was very clear that, you know, assuming it was a surprise attack, the country was under an unprecedented attack with terrorists going after high-value targets. Well, the Secret Service would have to assume that the president would be the highest-value target. What better thing for terrorists who hate America than to kill the President of the United States? So they should have immediately rushed him to an unknown safe location. In fact, that's their standard operating procedure. Those are their orders. And in fact, one Secret Service Marine evidently said, we're out of here, as soon as he saw the second tower hit. And
right,
yet,
Professor Griffin, let me get you to hold it right there. If you can hold on to that thought, we have to take a break here. Can you stick around for a while tonight, right?
Oh, sure.
Okay, good. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll have about 4 or 5 minutes, and we have the top of the hour break, and I want to pick this up also on the other side of the top of the hour. But when we come back, let's pursue that the cumulative and the deductive rationale or reasoning that you've accumulated. I'm not accumulated, but that you've written about, and also if there's a possibility for inductive reasoning or inductive arguments that filter in here. We'll be right back. We're talking with Professor David Ray Griffin. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stay in the time, brother, because it's nature.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower of a TV. You know, the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. I was sitting in the classroom, and Andy Card, my chief of staff, was sitting over here, walked in and said, a second plane has hit the tower. America's under attack.
It's about 7 before the hour. We're talking with Professor David Ray Griffin, who has authored, among other books, The New Pearl Harbor. That little soundbite that you just heard, before we go back to discussion, Professor Griffin, that little soundbite you just heard, of course it would have been literally impossible for not only George Bush, but for anyone to have seen on television the first airplane hit the tower. Is that correct?
Well, evidently so, although...
In a live situation. There were no television cameras. I don't think there was any network or cable television network with a camera pointed at the tower.
Yeah. Actually, somebody wrote to me and claimed that she and several other people did see that on CNN, but I don't know one way or the other. So I had always assumed that wasn't true, but she was a person with quite a reputation. So I'm not sure.
Well,
but
I think she has to be mistaken, because CNN, unless there is someone at CNN who's developed psychic powers and knew that the trade towers were going to be hit and put one of their cameras on it, I don't see how that's possible. Right before the break, you were talking about the cumulative evidence, the deductive evidence. What about the possibility of the use of inductive reasoning or inductive arguments into this? Again, what I'm trying to do here is just establish some sort of ground on which we can stand for the rest of this discussion tonight.
Yes, let me come to that, but let me quickly finish the point I was making,
right,
which is that the very fact that the Secret Service didn't whisk Bush away when they should have assumed that a hijacked plane might be bearing down on them that very minute shows that they had rather strong confidence that the president was not a target. And how could they have known that unless they knew who was in charge of the various airplanes?
Well,
now, to come to the question of the various kinds of argument, what most people use, at least implicitly in this, is the another kind that has been called abduction. Charles Peirce called it that a long time ago. It's known in philosophy of science circles in any case. And the more popular term for it is simply inference to the best explanation.
Right.
So it's quite similar to induction. So that you gather the relevant cumulative evidence and then just ask, well, what hypothesis will best take account of all of this evidence?
So based on that sort of logic and or reasoning, then it's impossible to escape either a let it happen or made it happen position where it concerns the Bush administration and this attack on the country. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, and I would say it's impossible to escape the
make it happen. Mm-hmm. All right, we stretched the last segment, so we've got another break coming up here, and this is fairly lengthy. So if you need to get a cup of tea or a cup of coffee during this break, Professor Griffin, now's the time to do it. When we come back, though, I can't. The other thing I can't get straight in my mind is this: if the Bush administration made this happen, why were they so sloppy about it? The obvious, obvious to me, controlled collapse of three buildings, the obvious lack of damage from a jetliner hitting the Pentagon, and the obvious crash pattern in Pennsylvania. We'll discuss it when we come back.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
In 2004, the Bush-Cheney campaign asked conservative activists to send them their church membership directories for political organizing purposes. Although most religious leaders condemned the tactic, some right-wing evangelicals jumped on board. Now the North Carolina Republican Party has once again ripped this page from the Rove playbook for the 2006 midterm elections. Last week, the state party sent out an email asking registered Republicans to furnish it with, quote, as many church directories as you can in an effort to energize North Carolina's congregations. Party officials claim they're only engaging in voter registration efforts, but as one reverend put it, no one bought that defense during the 2004 elections, and we won't buy it in 2006 either. Mainstream religious leaders, most Americans understand the vital role that separation of church and state play in protecting our plurality and freedom of religion. But don't count on those like North Carolina's Republican Party to catch on anytime soon. I'm Katrina VandenHeuvel of The Nation for Air America. For more, go to thenation.com.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning. Totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
I'm concerned about my son Jesse's height. He's small for a 15-year-old.
Have you tried Height Max?
What's that?
Height Max is a new height-enhancing supplement that helps 12 to 25-year-olds maximize their growth potential. It's a patented blend of vitamins, herbs, and amino acids, and you don't need a prescription.
How do I order Height Max?
Call them direct at 1-877-GROW-TALL. There is a 30-day risk-free offer going on now.
Ah, that's easy. 1-877-GROW-TALL.
Or buy it on the web at heightmax.com.
Order today and grow taller with Height Max. Height Max is a subsidiary of Sunny Health Nutrition Technology.
America Radio News. I'm Bill Crowley. The Commerce Secretary says the Bush administration applied facts and not emotions in deciding to hand over operations at six major U.S. seaports to an Arab company. Carlos Gutierrez rejects what he calls the emotional reaction of critics. He insists the U.S. is not turning over the security of our ports by giving control to a government-owned firm in the United Arab Emirates. Republican members of Congress, though, continue to hammer the Bush administration today over the decision to approve the sale of the port operations. New York lawmakers among the earliest and loudest voices against the deal, and George Bush's pledge to veto any attempt to block the deal did not deter members of his own party from speaking out after the sale. Dubai Ports World would assume operations of Port Authority of New York and New Jersey site in Newark and other sites around the country. Danish scientists say they're changing course to avoid Muslim protests over the publication of Prophet Muhammad cartoons. A spokesman says around the world sailing expedition will now steer around much of the Muslim world, and they hope the outrage that has boiled up against Danish interests. The voyage sponsored by Denmark's government, the crew of the floating lab originally planned to go through the Mediterranean and Red Sea around the tip of India toward Thailand. Now they say they will sail around the southern tip of Africa and go straight to Australia, South America, and the east coast of the U.S. Federal investigators trying to figure out why an air traffic controller directed three planes onto the same runway at Los Angeles International Airport last week. An FAA spokesman says it was pretty close. Last Friday, the controller directed a departing turboprop to taxi on the same runway where he just cleared a Southwest Airlines jet to land. And he also told an Air Canada jet it could cross the same runway on its way to the terminals. The pilot of the smaller plane saw the incoming Southwest jet stop short of the runway. The jet roared past 275 feet away, 50 feet above the smaller plane. Saudi Arabia today refused to sign on to the U.S. effort to deny foreign aid money to Palestinian government led by Hamas. The Saudis, the second Arab ally in 2 days to reject Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Yesterday, Egypt said it was premature to cut off aid to a Hamas-led government. The foreign ministers of both countries say the world should not prejudge Hamas. This is Air America Radio News.
I do not believe anyone could have prevented the horror of September the 11th.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is Air America Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. We're talking with Professor David Ray Griffin, who, among other things, has written the book The New Pearl Harbor about the attack on this country. Let's go back, Professor Griffin, to right before the break. This question about the sloppiness of these conspirators in the Bush administration. Why was it done in such a bad way? I think it's obvious to make a conclusion. Now, if one's a structural engineer, one might come to a different conclusion, but it's obvious that these towers came down in what appear to be controlled demolitions. It is obvious to my untrained eye that there was no massive passenger jet that had slammed into the Pentagon. In fact, to me, it looked like a missile. To my untrained eye, it looks like the crash scene in central Pennsylvania was a result of something being shot out of the sky instead of crashing. Now, if all of those impressions on my part are true, why were the conspirators so sloppy?
I say that's a good question, and I think all those things are true. As far as answers to that, I would say one thing is that even in very well-planned operations, things sometimes go wrong. Now, I don't have a theory as to what really happened and what maybe went wrong that day, but some people have suggested some plausible scenarios, such as that something happened to Flight 77. In fact, there was a report that a jet airliner went down on the Kentucky border there. And so some people have speculated, that the original plan wasn't working out, so at the last minute they had to substitute a plan. Again, I have no idea. Some people have also suggested that with regard to Building 7, why have that come down so many hours after the others, not till 5:20-something that afternoon? And again, some people have speculated that the explosives didn't work the first time, and somehow they had to be something else had to be done. Again, I'm not supporting that. I'm just saying it's a possibility. Another thing, besides the fact that things go wrong, is that if it was the same people who planned the Iraq War, these are not geniuses. And
for sure.
They engage in some pretty poor planning, obviously. A third factor is that I think they also knew from previous experience that they could count on the press to cover things up, no matter how sloppy they were. So even though there are some of these really obvious things such as you mentioned, and let me mention another one. It was very clear that Vice President Cheney had gone down to the underground shelter, the Emergency Operations Center, about 9:15. Norman Mineta got down there at 9:20, said Cheney was already there. And yet the 9/11 Commission report says Cheney didn't get down there till about 45 minutes later, that is, almost 10 o'clock. That protected him from the evidence that Mineta had given that Cheney was involved in a stand-down order for for whatever it was that hit the Pentagon, and also for ordering the shoot-down of Flight 93 over Pennsylvania. So they claim that Cheney didn't even give the shoot-down order until after 10 after 10. Now, these are patently false statements, and yet the press has not breathed a word of it, as they have not about any of the other omissions and distortions that I and many other people have reported.
If we're to rely on so-called mainstream media to another cliche, break this case wide open, I think we're going to be waiting a long time. The two contending demons that I have ricocheting around inside of my head, Professor Griffin, are these. It is difficult for me to believe, on the one hand, that the entire defense apparatus of the United States, after having spent trillions of dollars on that defense apparatus over the past 65, 70 years, that defense apparatus could be penetrated to such an alarming degree, such a catastrophic degree, by a group of men armed with nothing more than box cutters and a certain ideology. That demon ricochets up against the one that says, it's impossible for me to content to believe that no matter how venal, how corrupt my government might have been, and I say my, I'm kind of generic there, this is not my government, but the government in place, the United States, could engineer and execute such an outrageous attack against its own people. Those are the two demons. Do you have any idea how I can reconcile that?
Yes, I do. by studying some historical evidence that suggests strongly the other possibility. That is, there's a fairly new book out by a Swiss researcher named Daniel Ganser, G-A-N-S-E-R, called NATO Secret Armies. He shows that from the end of World War II on, during the Cold War, the CIA and the Pentagon sponsored these secret armies, right-wing armies in Europe that deliberately attacked their own and killed, in many cases, their own people to create terrorism and blame it on the left, particularly the Communist Party, to make people move to the right. So we see that our Pentagon, our CIA, are capable of at least killing innocent civilians in allied countries. I mean, we're talking about Italy, France, Germany, Belgium, so on, for political purposes. Secondly, of course, there's Operation Northwoods,
right,
which was revealed by James Bamford to the American people a couple years ago, in which the Pentagon had presented a plan to President Kennedy as a bunch of pretexts for
The Cuban invasion, right.
And some of these pretexts, possible scenarios, did include killing Americans.
As a matter of fact, the Operation Northwoods plot or plan or pattern was alarmingly similar to what the psychopaths had planned for September 11th. How do we, as a society, as a nation, continue going about our business, birthing our babies, burying our dead, if we accept the idea that the leadership of this country committed this kind of an act against us?
I know, it's very difficult. One of the recent reviews I got on Amazon.com, The reviewer simply said, do not read this book if you ever want to sleep again. My wife says that all my previous books, people couldn't stay awake while they were reading them. This one, after you read it, you can't go to
sleep.
Can't
go to sleep, right.
And so it is, and this is one reason a lot of people don't want to think about this. They have a hunch that maybe it's true, but they don't want to know it because it's just too awful.
Right.
To contemplate.
Right.
But I'm afraid we need to, or things are just going to get even worse.
I think that's a position I've been in for a long period of time since the attack on the country. Let's take another break here. And when we come back, Dr. Griffin, if we can address the question, what was the purpose of the 9/11 Commission? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
First of all, tear now, war in Iraq. We're reaching a point where we can't turn back. Let's lose the guns and let's lose the bombs. Stop the corporate contributions that they'll build upon.
I knew that the farther we got away from September the 11th, the more likely it would be that I would continue to have to convince people we live in a dangerous world, and we do.
Don't get us wrong, because we love America, but that's no reason to get hysterical. And when you're going to cheer up, because we ain't wild folks, we ain't having it. In a world going on, it's hard to think right. So we want to fight and say it's right. We're going on all day and night. Two times we fight and then riot.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old, and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's
I realized we'd get the trifecta.
21 past the hour, we're talking with Professor David Ray Griffin, the author of The New Pearl Harbor. What was the purpose of the 9/11 Commission, Professor Griffin? And if I remember right, Henry Kissinger was first offered the job and turned it down because he would have had to have revealed some of his financial ties or his connections in that shady, dusty world. What was the purpose of the 9/11 Commission, really?
Yes, when Kissinger was first appointed, many people, including the New York Times, suggested this was a way of containing the investigation, that is, covering up the truth. But in fact, they replaced Kissinger with somebody even worse, that is, Philip Zelikow. Is you know, has been essentially a member of the Bush administration, and you know, he and Condoleezza Rice had worked in the first Bush administration together on the National Security Council. They wrote a book together then during the Clinton years, and then she brought him on to help with the transition to the new administration. Then he was appointed to the president's review board, and now he's in the State Department. So he essentially had the White House investigating itself. Zelikow, as the executive director, ran the commission because he was in charge of all the staff, and the staff were the ones who did the investigation, not the people on TV. So it was all smoke and mirrors to essentially support the official story, which is that this was carried out entirely by 19 Arab Muslims under the inspiration of Osama bin Laden, and they simply ignored all the evidence to the contrary. So every bit of evidence that supported the alternative conspiracy theory, which is the Bush administration itself did it, they either distorted it, which is what they did with about 2% of the evidence, or they omitted it, which is what they did with about 98% of the evidence.
Given that, what remedies exist then for us, for the American public, insofar as getting justice, seeking justice, receiving justice for this attack?
Well, that's one reason it causes people sleepless nights, and rightly so, when you realize the enormity of this, because normally with, you know, our various branches of government, we've got checks and balances, but in this case, we've got a Congress who obviously thus far has refused to do anything and will continue to probably do that, certainly if the Republican majority continues. Then normally you think, well, let's see, we could go to the Justice Department. Well, no.
No.
We could go to the Supreme Court? Well, no.
Mm-mm.
And then all we've got left is the Fourth Estate. And thus far, the mainstream part of the Fourth Estate, as you said, has shown virtually no inclination to do this. Now, there have been a few openings. You know, my lecture in Madison was carried on C-SPAN. That's not exactly the New York Times or NBC, but it is a national audience. And then there have been a few stories. The LA Times Magazine ran a neutral to positive story. And I have been contacted by two other major news organizations who say they want to do a story. It hasn't come about yet. So it's possible that as things get worse and worse in Iraq and elsewhere in the world, as America gets more and more despised, maybe some of the media will say, look, enough is enough. Oh, we've got to reveal the truth, because this is not going to be, although this was done for the purpose of supporting the American empire, this is actually going to diminish the American empire. And so, as was done with the Nixon administration, the press finally turned against him, and it was over pretty quickly. So it could happen here. I'm not optimistic, but at least I think it's possible, so I keep at it.
The was the primary objective then of the Bush administration in not just the administration, but the Project for New American Century people, the neocons, the people behind this, was the primary motivation of what you just mentioned, establishment of American empire or hegemony or the acquisition of what remaining oil resources are left, because that is a crunch that's coming that's going to hit us like a ton of bricks. And again, I have to take a break here, but maybe that's the next question. Was the gain from such an act as this, the establishment, without question then, of American empire, without any resistance from lawmakers here at home. We'll take a break and be right back. We're talking with Professor David Ray Griffin. Stay with us.
Oh, we'll get Bin Laden. My attitude was, once we get him running, it's just a matter of time before we bring him to justice.
Enough is enough is enough is enough.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
There were dark days of tax preparation, my friends, where you had to run around, get forms, or go to a franchise tax store and pay through the nose. But those days are over. There's this thing called the Internet and this website called TurboTax.com. Now you don't go to your taxes come to you. TurboTax asks you simple questions and fills out all the right forms. It checks for errors and calculations are guaranteed accurate. Now that's what I call progress. Learn more at TurboTax.com.
Thanks a lot for the ride home. Hey, no problem. Just because you're a sophomore doesn't mean I can't talk to you.
Thanks.
Hey, while you're here, want to take a hit of some weed? Some good stuff. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
In what's called the PDB, there was a warning about bin Laden's desires on America. Frankly, I didn't think there was anything new.
It's 26 before the hour. Professor David Ray Griffin is our guest. That question, Professor Griffin, about the biggest gain for the Bush administration and this entire crowd of neoconservatives, what was the goal, the expectation after this attack on the country?
Yes, what 9/11 did was allow this agenda of the neoconservatives, and that includes Cheney and Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz and Libby, to put into practice an agenda they had been wanting to put into practice since the end of the Cold War, certainly since 1992. This is essentially to have the first completely universal empire in history. So the motivation isn't all economic. It's also partly political or psychological, just the very heady idea that we're the first ones in history to control the whole earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then to actualize that agenda, there were several sub-agendas there. One was they needed a pretext for their pre-established wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, both of which were mainly for oil, but also for geopolitical dominance. They also wanted to build up what you could call military omnipotence. So this meant an increase in military spending, even though the Cold War was over, and they wanted to increase it by $100 or $200 billion, which they've just about achieved. They also wanted a psychological state in the American people that would allow them to exercise what they call preventive or preemptive warfare, which is attacking a country that is not, you know, immediately threatening you, to bring about regime change. And finally, they wanted to put into effect this Patriot Act, so-called, so that if we got too frisky in resisting the empire, they can simply lock us up. So it was quite an agenda, and they've achieved all of it thus far.
The move to fascism in this country, I think I've said this before on the program, fascism as a philosophy has not been very deep in the American psyche. It's been scratched a couple of times, and as soon as you scratch around on that sort of ground, fascism pops up. We don't even have to go into Lindbergh and Ford and some of the captains of industry back in the 20s and 30s and their attitude about fascism, but. Have these people never heard, in their grand designs of global dominance, have they never heard of China?
Well, actually, in the writings of many of the neoconservatives and in that famous document of the Project for the New American Century called Rebuilding America's Defenses, China is their other major preoccupation other than Iraq. And but they're kind of at a loss as to what to know to do what to do about that. You know, even the idea that North Korea might have nuclear weapons has evidently given them pause. So if they're even hesitant to bring about regime change there, or you know, a preemptive nuclear attack, all the more would they be less inclined to do it with China. So I don't know what they're thinking about there.
Well, it's further proof to me that these people are mad. They're simply insane. Their plans go out so far, and when they hit an obvious or a logical brick wall, they just go back to what they were doing and say, well, we're they start repeating themselves. Well, we're going to take over Afghanistan and Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan and Pakistan and China. What China? It's madness. Dr. Griffin, I want to get some callers in here, some people to chat with you, ask you some questions. Is that all right with you?
Okay, I will have to get off fairly soon.
Okay, how about another 10-15 minutes?
That'd be fine.
We have one more break, and then the top of the hour. Let's start with Dave, who's calling in from Scottsdale, Arizona. Dave, you're on with Professor Griffin.
you're talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm from Northwest Indiana. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, my bad.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make a comment and then a couple comments. First of all, I think that Bush's appearance at the grade school at 9/11 was a carefully planned photo op designed to play on our psyche that our kids were no longer safe. I also remember back in the spring or summer of 2001 that all heard this on the radio, that all vacations were canceled for senior staff of the Bush administration due to a terror alert. And then a week or two before the U.S. attacked Iraq, I saw a documentary that interviewed Republicans from prior administrations as well as a reporter from the Weekly Standard. They called an appearance at Ohio State University where William Cohen, Madeleine Albright, and Sandy Berger were blasted by the students for the recent bombing of Iraq by Clinton. And they realized that due to that incident that the American public would never approve of attacking Iraq without a good reason. So that gave them opportunity, you know, that, when they heard that the planes were coming, they thought, well, we'll let them hit. And then that way, and I think they had people go back in the building so they could have the casualty up higher. And another thing I think possibly why they wanted some people to go in, because some of the reports I've heard were people have heard that explosions, oh, not only explosions, I suppose, but people had gone to work during the weekend before or whatever and couldn't get into the building because it was closed. And maybe
right.
They wanted.
All right, you put a lot out there, Dave. Let me get some, thanks, Dave. Let me get some comments from Professor Griffin on, you don't have to address all of that, but go ahead. It's like a buffet. Pick a couple.
Yeah, no, I think everything Dave said was right. It was what they call a PSYOP, a psychological operation to create a certain state of mind in the American psyche. Part of that was then the story that these were Arab Muslims. That's very convenient because then you've got a pretense to attack a Muslim nation that's not Arab, such as Iran, which was on their agenda and still is. And also you could attack a secular Arab a government such as that of Saddam Hussein, that is, that was not particularly Muslim. So it was very convenient for what they wanted. The thing about explosions, I've written an article that is published, if people can Google it under explosive testimony, which summarizes a lot of the evidence from firemen and emergency medical workers who were working on 9/11, who reported, dozens of them reported hearing and feeling one or several explosions in the towers.
Jesse is calling from TVNewsLies.org. Jesse, welcome to the program. Thanks.
How are you, Mike? Nice to hear you, Professor Griffin. I've got a couple of observations. One, I think you were talking about a smoking gun before. And I think there's a smoking gun that's been hanging out since way before 9/11 that I've identified and I'd like to share with you. But I'd also like to talk about the believability really quick. I think if the American public knew a little bit more about the philosophy of neocons and the Machiavellian roots that they have, they would understand that these guys do anything at all costs to achieve and maintain powers. The two smoking guns that exist is not the bread trail, the breadcrumb trail. It's the bread loaf trail of the documents like the Project for New American Century, the Zbigniew Brzezinski's book. They said what they wanted to do, and they said they couldn't do it without the Pearl Harbor. But the smoking gun is probably sitting in Dick Cheney's secret energy meeting notes. I'm sure if we pry into that, we'll find maps of the energy infrastructure of from Iraq, which has already been disclosed. We'll find plans to go into Afghanistan. These meetings took place before 9/11, and there's no way he could have had those items in our energy policy meetings unless he knew there was going to be something that allowed him to go there, and they couldn't have done it without 9/11. I think it shows pretext.
Professor Griffin?
Well, I'm glad to hear from Jesse. We've communicated by email a little bit. And I think he's absolutely right on both points. With regard to the philosophy of the neocons, there's an excellent book by Gary Dorian called Imperial Designs, which is really the best history of the neoconservative thinking, at least the one I know about and the one that Andrew Bacevich relies heavily on in his New American Militarism. And the point about energy, I'll just say I think that's right, too. They had to know something like this was coming. The point about the new Pearl Harbor, of course, that's the title of my first book. And with regard to getting military spending in order to bring about what they call the revolution in military affairs, which meant making it much more technologically sophisticated with smart weapons and so, they said this transformation in the military will probably go rather slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing events, such as a new Pearl Harbor. And that probably did come from Brzezinski's 1997 book, The Grand Chessboard, in which he essentially said the same thing.
Jesse's gone. Jesse, thanks a lot. Dave is calling. Now let's get Dave from Scottsdale, Arizona. Dave, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike, I talked to you before. I used to work for NASA.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I could tell you right now, tonight, I was sitting on 9/11 in building 4727, the main distribution communications frame at Marshall Space Flight Center, and I watched the first plane hit the building. Now, you might say, why didn't I say something? Because immediately they would say, how do you know where that feed came from? That feed only goes into an area that's above the main communications vault on that site. I think I explained to you before the computer power and communications technology that they have at NASA. NASA is not a flying around the sky industry. It's as well as the NSA, the CIA, the CIA, you name it, it's part and parcel of that whole thing.
So you're saying that it was deliberately taped or filmed, by whom?
Well, there was several reports of Mossad agents being on top of the buildings, filming that thing.
But how did you? I'm curious, regardless of who taped it or filmed it, how did you see the feed? Where did the feed come from?
The feed was in the main console. I was sitting at a communications console, much like you see when they showed you NASA shooting off a rocket.
Right.
Okay, I was the senior safety inspector, and I was writing up the safety inspection report right in front of that module.
But I'm saying who was controlling the camera that was taking the shot of the first plane hitting the tower that wound up in a television feed to your monitor?
I personally believe, and I can't prove it, but I personally believe that the Mossad agents were televising that thing. The folks inside building World Trade Center number 7 were filming that thing. That was their control center.
Why would they feed it to NASA?
Well, there's folks there that deal with the same kinds of things that the DIA deal with, the CIA. And it only goes to certain people.
All right. Well, very quickly, very quickly, Professor Griffin, what do you think about that?
Well, that would certainly explain your earlier question, which is about how Bush saw it. That's, of course, one view that special video was taped to his limousine so that he saw it on the way, so that he actually did see in real time the first tower struck.
Dear God, well, listen, hold on just a second. Is there any chance, we got to take a break here, but is there any chance that the two of you might want to talk some other time off the air?
Yeah, I would like to.
All right, let me put you both on hold, yeah. And our associate producer in New York will arrange that, then we'll come back to you, Professor Griffin. Very quickly here, a break coming up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Air America.
Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm concerned about my son Jesse's height. He's small for a 15-year-old.
Have you tried Height Max?
What's that?
Height Max is a new height-enhancing supplement that helps 12 to 25-year-olds maximize their growth potential. It's a patented blend of vitamins, herbs, and amino acids, and you don't need a prescription.
How do I order Height Max?
Call them direct at 1-877-GROW-TALL. There is a 30-day risk-free offer going on now.
Ah, that's easy. 1-877-GROW-TALL.
Or buy it on the web at heightmax.com.
Order today and grow taller with Height Max. Height Max is a subsidiary of Sunny Health Nutrition Technology.
No matter what you do, work can be stressful, and all that stress might cause you to grind your teeth at night. So why not go out and buy yourself a doctor's night guard, the dental protector you wear at night to cushion and save your teeth and put all that grinding to a stop. Just like that. Relieve the nightly grind with the doctor's night guard in the oral care section.
Connect the dots. How come the dots weren't connected? Well, the Patriot Act helps us connect the dots. It is inexcusable to say, on the one hand, connect the dots and not give us a chance to do so. We've connected the dots, or trying to connect the dots.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we lost Dave in Scottsdale. A phone follow-up here again. But Professor Griffin, we have your email address. So if Dave calls back in, he'll give me some information, and I'll pass it on to you, and maybe the two of you can get together. We've only got a couple of minutes left here. Let me just ask you two things. First of all, what the hell are we supposed to do in this country, given this information? A. B, is another attack going to occur?
you know, those are really simple, easy questions to answer.
Right.
I've already said with regard to the first one, all we can do is try to get more and more people to know and to speak out and put pressure on their newspapers, though I'm trying to get the churches more involved. One problem is that, you know, the most vocal churches have been completely supportive of the war on terror, and most of their members would not even look at the evidence to suggest that 9/11 was a planned attack. So the more mainline churches need to step up and take some action here. Secondly, with regard to, I'm sorry, what was your
another attack?
Oh, well, you know, a lot of people have predicted it, and I simply don't know. And it may be one of those things that is a contingency. That is, it's planned to occur only if things get bad enough for the administration that they think they need another one.
Well, I don't know how it could get any worse for this administration than it is tonight, even as we speak. A full-blown civil war in Iraq now. The Chinese getting ready to cash in their chips on us. The Iranians threatening to turn their oil market into where they just use euros, which will have a devastating effect on U.S. dollars. Everything broken here at home, how could things get much worse?
Well, I meant, of course, much worse in this country for the administration, so that if there is some move towards, say, impeachment, which I just learned that Lewis Lapham has called for in the
yes.
latest edition of
Harper's.
Issue of Harper's,
or
for some other reason they think they need to scare the bejesus out of us again.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. If this Cheney thing, I've just read tonight that there's strong evidence that some Secret Service guy said, he was drunk.
Right.
And who knows what else. I mean, they've got so many. Dave Letterman went through the other night. So many things that each one should have brought this administration down.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't done it. Thus far, they've proved pretty untouchable. But if they got to that point, maybe they would. But I don't know the future.
Right. Well, it's certainly going to be a challenge, the future. Professor Griffin, thank you very much for spending some time with us tonight. I do appreciate it. Watch your back, okay?
Okay, and thank you, Mike, for spending time on this.
Absolutely. Take care. We'll talk again. We'll be back after top of the hour break here. Stick around. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
On Air America Radio.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just golden coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Know the greatest phrase ever invented in shopping? No, it's not, I'll just wait in the car. The greatest phrase is, no thanks, I'm just looking. I mean, what freedom, what liberation. What a great way to buy car insurance. In fact, why not do some looking right now? Go to Geico.com. It's quick, it's easy, and you could save hundreds. You know, saving money looks good on you. Geico.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
America Radio News, I'm Jeff Weiser. President Bush was not aware of the pending port deal until after it was finalized. That's the word from White House spokesman Scott McClellan. Under the deal, a company owned by the government of the United Arab Emirates would manage six major ports in the eastern U.S. The deal has drawn sharp criticism from both Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill, who have vowed to block the deal. Bush says he will veto any measure that blocks that deal, saying it will not harm national security. Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman wants his congressional colleagues to back off their opposition to the deal. Republicans and Democrats in Congress are threatening to block the UAE port takeover. The lawmakers claim it would threaten homeland security to allow the firm control over American ports. Lieberman says he has concerns about the tone of the opposition.
We've got to be real careful here to base more than questions on genuine evidence. Otherwise, in my opinion, we run the risk of being guilty of a kind of discrimination against the United Arab Emirates just because it is Arab.
Lieberman says port security and the unloading of cargo ships will still be done by Americans. A New York City man who was accidentally exposed to anthrax is being treated. Mayor Michael Bloomberg says the man was exposed to naturally occurring anthrax as he worked with raw animal hides they are used to make African drums. And a few others who worked with him are being treated with antibiotics as a precaution. Neighbors of that New York City man have mixed emotions after hearing the news. Jim Smith reports from New York.
Gerard Vaughn says he believes it is just an accident and there's no need to panic.
If it's a terrorist, I'm scared, but I don't. He's a nice person.
Kate Culkin says it is a scary thought, but she believes the city has acted appropriately.
I have to say the city has a pretty good track record of handling crises better than I think the rest of the country, of not getting hysterical and taking the right steps.
She says if the city handles a transit strike, it can handle this as well. Jim Smith, New York.
Eight lucky Nebraskans who worked at a meatpacking plant should never have to worry about finances again. They were introduced as the big winners in Saturday's record Powerball drawing. They held the only winning ticket in the $365 million drawing. After taxes, they'll get $22.1 million apiece. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Let's go right to some phone calls. I know some of you folks have been holding on for a while. Let's start with Doug in Phoenix, Arizona. Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks. First off, I want to say thanks to David Ray Griffin and to you for having him on. Secondly, I wanted to know, because I was reading on 9/11 Blogger about your show, mm-hmm. and someone had mentioned in the blogs that you haven't read David Ray Griffin's books. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So how did you come about to because my understanding is that you totally agree with David, basically, as much as you know.
Well, I don't know that I agree with anybody. What I have done in the 5 years since the attack on this country was engineered, as far as I'm concerned, I've tried to follow the timelines, read the information available, read the information that wasn't necessarily available. I've only read one book, and that was the one about Bin Laden. The one about Bin Laden, the Forbidden Truth, about not necessarily Bin Laden, but the Taliban coming to Houston, Texas, back in the late 90s. It's possible to reach a conclusion similar to somebody else by following parallel tracks. You don't necessarily need to read any particular author. Now, that's A. Here's B. There's an enormous amount of stuff out there. David Ray Griffin is one of many who are making a substantial claim that the story is put out by the Bush crime family has been a lie. I make that claim. The difference is Griffin and other people, the writers, have put together what they consider to be evidence, whereas what I use is certainly evidence as far as I'm concerned, but I haven't codified it or put it into a book or anything of the sort. So I've arrived at that conclusion that the people who are illegitimately running this country either, and I still am not totally clear in my head on this part, either let this happen or made it happen, but they were involved.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that. I totally agree. I've done my own research, and I came to the conclusion, and then I discovered David Ray Griffin's writings.
Right.
Well, his first one was the only one out at the time, the New Pearl Harbor. But yeah, I totally agree that you.
Well, another writer you might want to check out is Michael Ruppert. Are you familiar with him?
The Rubicon.
Ruppert. Yeah, he has a website, fromthewilderness.com. And Michael Ruppert has, he's a former L.A. police officer who became aware of what Republicans are capable of during the Reagan years when the crack cocaine explosion occurred in L.A. And it was, of course, brought about by Oliver North and a lot of people involved in funding the Contra terrorists in Central America. It wasn't enough that they had to trade TOW missiles to the Iranians for hostages, but they also had to introduce a crack into the American drug market. So Michael Ruppert, that's when he first became aware of this horrible, horrible so-called black operations that were being conducted by the CIA. He had a website at one time called copvcia.org, the V, of course, representing Versus. So Michael Ruppert is another one that you might want to check out insofar as, 9/11.
He's been in the forefront, actually.
Before
even I knew of David Ray Griffin.
Well, there you go.
I have a question for you about, in your, findings, have you come across, I had found a few years ago, and it took until just recently that I think it came into the truth movement, as it were, vocabulary about the two airplanes from United having been still registered valid aircraft until about just a couple months ago, right at the same time that Lucian
I don't know. I may have come across that. There's just been a mountain of evidence or facts or speculations or theories to sort through, and God only knows what you know, what I've come across in the past 4 or 5 years. And I don't mean to imply that I have some secret sources. I have the same sources you do as anybody else. It just requires time to dig through, to use the Internet, to use LexisNexis, to use reference various different references in order to find the information. So I'm sure I came across that. Listen, let me move on, Doug. Thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate your call. Raouf is calling from New Jersey. Raouf, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello, Mike. First of all, I want to echo the prior caller's thank you for bringing David, sure. Professor David Griffin on and exposing some of the listeners who haven't read his books or his articles all over the place. I wanted to actually ask him and present this question to you is, you know, believing that 9/11 could have been or was an inside job, or at least you know, the planners were aware about what's going on. From a religious person's perspective, as Dr. Griffin is, and from an ethical perspective, and a citizen of this country, what are basically any tools to do to the planners of who were behind 9/11, since it led basically to a lot of death and destruction around the world, like, you know, beginning from Afghanistan to my home country of Iraq and potentially other new, you know, states in the Middle East or the region.
Forgive me, Rove. Are you saying what legal remedies are there?
If any, yes.
To bring these people to justice?
Correct.
And
also to the victims of basically around the world and even in this country.
Right, right.
From the troops and so forth who actually suffered.
Yeah.
I
don't know. What are the remedies for the victims of Nikita Khrushchev? What are the remedies for the victims of Mao Zedong or Pol Pot or the Shah of Iran? I don't know. When you are in a position of absolute and utter power inside your own country, where you are running a totalitarian dictatorship, where resistance is met with gulags or torture or death or a combination of the three, and your judicial system has been perverted, as the Soviet judicial system was, as the Shahs, as the Chinese, and now as the judicial system in the United States has to a degree been perverted. How do you seek justice? That was one of the questions that I thought I asked Professor Griffin, and I know he gave me an answer, but I can't get my mind around what his answer was. I don't know how this is done, Rove. I have no idea. We have a system of justice in this country that, were it ever applied equitably, we would have been the envy of the world. It was a grand experiment. All the guarantees that were put in place that innocent people not be convicted. And at the same time, we have a right wing in this country that's been here since the country has been here that has said protecting the rights of individuals charged with a crime is coddling criminals. People who say that are sick and perverted and as far as I'm concerned, insane. Now, the system of justice that we wrote into our legal codes here was fine as far as it went. It just never went far enough. There were millions of people in this country who were denied justice, are still being denied justice. And I don't know how that is rectified or reconciled with the documents that this country is founded on. Again, we always have to remember, I don't know what your status is as citizenship in this country, but this country was founded on the twin pillars of racism and genocide. You do understand that, don't you?
Yeah, from a historical perspective, yet the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, like you said, did bring in...
Right, they were great documents. They were great documents, but they were written by men who, either because of the times or because of their own inclinations, were utter and absolute hypocrites where it concerned... we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. They didn't believe that at all. They absolutely didn't believe that. So, or that they didn't live it. So I don't know. Rove, I don't know what the answer is, but I appreciate the question. Thanks for checking in, pal. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malone.
Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all.
listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Hope, or visit us online at operationhope.org.
Subliminable messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
It's 21 past the hour. All right, back to phone calls. Roger is calling from Atlanta. Roger, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. This is ZZ from 9/11 Blogger, actually. I was to say thanks a ton for coming out on the issue a couple of weeks ago. I know that that can be kind of tough to admit publicly that you believe your government could do something like what we saw on 9/11.
Well, I'm old enough to know that my government can do, at least when it's in the hands of Republicans like Reagan, Nixon, or Bush, can do just about anything up to and including mass murder.
Well, and unfortunately, before I got into researching 9/11, I would definitely consider myself now one of those sheeple that didn't know those things. But now that I've moved on and started researching 9/11, you know, probably about almost 2 years ago, I've come to a lot of realizations about a lot of things. And I really appreciate you doing what you're doing and having Griffin on tonight as well.
Sure. All right. Well, thanks, Roger.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for checking in. Ed is calling from Tempe, Arizona. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. A lot of Arizona people on tonight.
Indeed.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for having Dr. Griffin on, and
sure.
Also just thank you for being the voice in the wilderness in Bush's America. It, actually, it's our America, and it really bothers me to think that it might be anything else. But,
boy, I hear that. I hear that, yeah.
I'm calling, well, I originally called for something else, but when I heard you had Dr. Griffin on, I kind of made some quick notes here, and it occurs to me that we're largely a people that are kind of history-free, and that makes us context-free when we try to wrap our heads around issues like 9/11.
That's right.
And so I've made a kind of a quick little list of you know, how past wars have gotten started. And it really kind of it put things in perspective to just kind of step out of our own time for a minute and think about how a lot of other things have happened. And the first two are from the World War II period, and they're Germans, but then the rest of these are all U.S. cases.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Reichstag fire, of course, which was
right.
used by Hitler to justify his dictatorship under the Enabling Act, and also was used as an excuse for the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, when he actually wanted to go to war and invade Poland, the Nazis staged a phony Polish attack on their radio station at Gliwice,
right.
Where they, you know, sent some stormtroopers in dressed as Poles
mm-hmm.
and blew the place up. But in our own history, we've had a lot of these, too. We had, starting with the many Indian wars of the 19th century, you know, most of those were based on lies of one sort or another, false promises or broken agreements.
Spanish-American War.
Spanish-American War. President Polk sent troops across the border into Mexico
mm-hmm.
and marched around there until the Mexicans finally fired on him. And then it was in all the newspapers, American troops fired on American soil, you know, as if they had actually been on American soil. The Spanish-American War started with the battleship Maine kind of unexpectedly
right.
showing up in Havana Harbor and then mysteriously blowing up there. Pearl Harbor, it looks like there's probably advanced knowledge in the FDR administration that was going down, and it was certainly intentionally provoked by, with the oil embargo. But it looks like, based on some documents that have come out in the last decade or so, that there was actually...
Ed? Oh, no. All right. Is he still there? We lost the call. Okay, Ed. I'm sorry. We have crazy equipment in New York, which is where your call is routed before it comes to us, and occasionally it eats a phone call. And I think you just got eaten. I'm sorry. I apologize. All right. We're getting close enough to a break here to just pause on the phone calls. John emailed in and said, thanks for tonight's program. Remember Filegate and Travelgate? Oh, God. And how tenacious the corporate media was, yet not one of those people is curious about 9/11? Statistically impossible, yet all remain silent. Yeah, I do. I think about earlier today. I was thinking about the footage that was run over and over until it's burned forever into my brain of Clinton and Monica Lewinsky at the rope line. How mainstream media in this country all media in this country, every last damn bit of it. Played that piece of videotape so many times, I was ready to scream anything. You know, I'll become a conservative. Just stop. Stop, for Christ's sake, stop. And they didn't. They wouldn't. Of course not. The Vince Foster story, the missing, some kind of missing, was that Filegate? Yeah, the missing files. The Clinton's firing people in the White House travel office when they were elected simply because the people in the travel office were stealing the American taxpayer blind. But, yeah, I remember that. I do, John. And no matter what the truth is about the attacks on this country, you're absolutely right. Media just doesn't care.
I want a big Big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm concerned about my son Jesse's height. He's small for a 15-year-old.
Have you tried Height Max?
What's that?
Height Max is a new height-enhancing supplement that helps 12 to 25-year-olds maximize their growth potential. It's a patented blend of vitamins, herbs, and amino acids, and you don't need a prescription.
How do I order Height Max?
Call them direct at 1-877-GROW-TALL. There is a 30-day risk-free offer going on now.
Ah, that's easy. 1-877-GROW-TALL.
Or buy it on the web at heightmax.com.
Order today and grow taller with Height Max. Height Max is a subsidiary of Sunny Health Nutrition Technology.
Honey?
Yeah?
Can you keep the kids busy? I'm doing our taxes.
Well, that's right. We're using TurboTax this year.
Mm-hmm. And it's so easy. TurboTax asks these simple questions, and it automatically fills in all the right forms.
Really?
Uh-huh. TurboTax also checks for errors, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Well, what about deductions?
Found ones I didn't even think of.
Like those little tax deductions jumping on the sofa?
What?
The kids.
No, I remembered them.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy. Taxes done right. Learn more at TurboTax.com or visit a retailer near you.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here, and you can hear me, of course, on Air America Radio. If you're as fed up with the Bush crime family as I am, you need to go to ImpeachBushGame.com. That's ImpeachBushGame.com, where you can get the new board game, Impeached, that points out the lies, incompetence, and stupidity of George W. and the entire Bush crime family. You'll have fun playing this eye-opening board game that dares to peek into the Bush administration. Impeached will challenge your ability to lie, cheat, and steal. I'm for real here. Order your game now at ImpeachBushGame.com.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
We'll be right back.
are in part one, chapter eight. Matter of fact, almost finished in chapter eight of George Orwell's 1984. When we left off last night, Winston Smith has been wandering around inside the Prole neighborhoods in London. And he wandering around, he found himself in front of the shop where he had bought what he is using as his diary. The shopkeeper takes him inside, and in this discussing things, chit-chat back and forth, the shopkeeper says, well, there's a room back here, and I have some other antiques in there, and they go back, and there's a picture on the wall that catches Winston Smith's attention. And the shopkeeper offers the painting or the picture for sale, and it's bolted to the wall, which is kind of unusual. So Winston is in the hidden room looking at the picture, and the old man who owns the shop has offered it to him. Winston did not buy the picture. It would have been an even more incongruous possession than the glass paperweight, and impossible to carry home unless it were taken out of its frame. But he lingered for some minutes more, talking to the old man, whose name, he discovered, was not Weeks, as one might have gathered from the inscription over the shopfront, but Charrington. Mr. Charrington, it seemed, was a widower, aged 63, and had inhabited this shop for 30 years. Throughout that time, he had been intending to alter the name of the window, but had never quite got to the point of doing it. All the while that they were talking about the half-remembered rhyme that kept running through Winston's head, "Oranges and lemons, say the bells of St. Clemens. You owe me three farthings, say the bells of St. Martin's." It was curious, but when you said it to yourself, you had the illusion of actually hearing bells, the bells of a lost London that still existed somewhere or other, disguised and forgotten. From one ghostly steeple after another, he seemed to hear them pealing forth. Yet so far as he could remember, he had never in his real life heard church bells ringing. He got away from Mr. Charrington and went down the stairs alone so as not to let the old man see him reconnoitering the street before stepping out of the door. He had already made up his mind that after a suitable interval, a month, say, he would take the risk of visiting the shop again. It was perhaps not more dangerous than shirking an evening at the center. The serious piece of folly had been to come back here in the first place after buying the diary and without knowing whether the proprietor of the shop could be trusted. However, yes, he thought again, he would come back. He would buy further scraps of beautiful rubbish. He would buy the engraving of St. Clement's Danes, take it out of its frame, and carry it home concealed under the jacket of his overalls. He would drag the rest of that poem out of Mr. Charrington's memory. Even the lunatic project of renting the room upstairs flashed momentarily through his mind again. For perhaps 5 seconds, exaltation made him careless, and he stepped out onto the pavement without so much as a preliminary glance through the window. He had even started humming to an improvised tune, "Oranges and lemons, say the bells of St. Clemens, you owe me three farthings, say the..." Suddenly his heart seemed to turn to ice and his bowels to water. A figure in blue overalls was coming down the pavement not 10 meters away. It was the girl from the fiction department, the girl with dark hair. The light was failing, but there was no difficulty in recognizing her. She looked him straight in the face and walked quickly on as though she had not seen him. For a few seconds, Winston was too paralyzed to move. Then he turned to the right and walked heavily away, not noticing for the moment that he was going in the wrong direction. At any rate, one question was settled. There was no doubting any longer that the girl was spying on him. She must have followed him here, because it was not credible that by pure chance she should have happened to be walking on the same evening of the same obscure back street, kilometers distant from any quarter where party members lived. It was just too great a coincidence. Whether she was really an agent of the thought police or simply an amateur spy actuated by officiousness hardly mattered. It was enough that she was watching him. Probably she had seen him go into the pub as well. It was an effort to walk. The lump of glass in his pocket banged against his thigh at each step, and he was half-minded to take it out and throw it away. The worst thing was the pain in his belly. For a couple of minutes, he had the feeling that he would die if he did not reach a lavatory soon, but there would be no public lavatories in a quarter like this. Then the spasm passed, leaving a dull ache behind. The street was a blind alley. Winston halted, stood for several seconds, wondering vaguely what to do, then turned around and began to retrace his steps. As he turned, it occurred to him that the girl had only passed him 3 minutes ago, and that by running he could probably catch up with her. He could keep on her track till they were in some quiet place, and then smash her skull in with a cobblestone. The piece of glass in his pocket would be heavy enough for the job. But he abandoned the idea immediately because even the thought of making any physical effort was unbearable. He could not run. He could not strike a blow. Besides, she was young and lusty and would defend herself. He thought also of hurrying to the community center and staying there till the place closed so as to establish a partial alibi for the evening. But that too was impossible. A deadly lassitude had taken hold of him. All he wanted was to get home quickly and then sit down and be quiet. It was after 22 hours when he got back to the flat. The lights would be switched off at the main at 23:30. He went into the kitchen and swallowed nearly a teacup full of Victory Gin. Then he went to the table in the alcove, sat down, and took the diary out of the drawer. But he did not open it at once. From the telescreen, a brassy female voice was squalling a patriotic song. He sat staring at the marbled cover of the book, trying without success to shut the voice out of his consciousness. It was at night that they came for you. Always at night. The proper thing was to kill yourself before they got you. Undoubtedly, some people did so. Many of the disappearances were actually suicides, but it needed desperate courage to kill yourself in a world where firearms or any quick and certain poison were completely unprocurable. He thought with a kind of astonishment of the biological uselessness of pain and fear, the treachery of the human body which always freezes into inertia at exactly the moment when a special effort is needed. He might have silenced the dark-haired girl if only he had acted quickly enough. But precisely because of the extremity of his danger, he had lost the power to act. It struck him that in a moment of crisis, one is never fighting against an external enemy, but always against one's own body. Even now, in spite of the gin, the dull ache in his belly made consecutive thought impossible. And it is the same, he perceived, in all seemingly heroic or tragic situations, on the battlefield, in the torture chamber, on a sinking ship. The issues that you are fighting for are always forgotten because the body swells up until it fills the universe, and even when you are not paralyzed by fright or screaming with pain, life is a moment-to-moment struggle against hunger or cold or sleeplessness, against a sour stomach or an aching tooth. He opened the diary. It was important to write something down. The woman on the telescreen had started a new song. Her voice seemed to stick into his brain like jagged splinters of glass. He tried to think of O'Brien, for whom or to whom the diary was written, but instead he began thinking of the things that would happen to him after the thought police took him away. It would not matter if they killed you at once. To be killed was what you expected. But before death, nobody spoke of such things, yet everybody knew of them. Before death, there was the routine of confession that had to be gone through, the groveling on the floor and screaming for mercy, the crack of broken bones, the smashed teeth and bloody clots of hair. Why did you have to endure it since the end was always the same? Why was it not possible to cut a few days or weeks out of your life? Nobody ever escaped detection, and nobody ever failed to confess. When once you had succumbed to thought crime, it was certain that by a given date you would be dead. Why then did that horror, which altered nothing, have to lie embedded in future time? He tried with a little more success than before to summon up the courage of O'Brien. "We shall meet in the place where there is no darkness," O'Brien had said to him. He knew what it meant, or thought he knew. The place where there is no darkness was the imagined future, which one could never see, but which, by foreknowledge, one could mystically share in. But with the voice from the telescreen nagging at his ears, he could not follow the train of thought further. He put a cigarette in his mouth. Half the tobacco promptly fell out onto his tongue, a bitter dust which was difficult to spit out again. The face of Big Brother swam into his mind, displacing that of O'Brien. Just as he had done a few days earlier, he slid a coin out of his pocket and looked at it. The face gazed up at him, heavy, calm, protecting. But what kind of smile was hidden beneath the dark mustache? Like a leaden nail, the words came back at him. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to be abused.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm so glad you got tickets to this concert.
Definitely. These guys put on a killer show.
Great. Let's go.
Wait. It's just the open band. Let's get a little stone first. It's crazy strong. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Our apologies, but in the interest of bettering the future of your teeth, we're going to resort to a rather unpleasant tactic. Coercion. We will play the sound of someone grinding their teeth at night until somebody out there buys a doctor's night guard. Wear it at night to cushion and save your teeth. Come on. Somebody? There. Thank you, Kelly Kaplan of Paramus, New Jersey, for buying a doctor's night guard and relieving the nightly grind in the oral care section.
Now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 10 before the hour. Our program tonight was engineered in New York City by Justin Yuen and Air America Radio's resident rock star, Jason Isaac. Our associate producer in New York City is Dee Neal. And our auxiliary crew, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives the program. By the way, they're having a fundraiser at WhiteRoseSociety.org. It's perpetual, folks. It never stops. This is liberal progressive media. You got to support it. So if you get a chance, go to WhiteRoseSociety.org and drop a dime on them, okay? Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief, and the executive producer is Catherine Bay. Back to some phone calls here. Let me see. How about Judy, who is calling in from Olympia, Washington? Judy, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey.
Can we go back to 1974? It was a very good year.
Yeah.
I was in the Army. I was a medic, and I witnessed Richard Nixon give his resignation speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the next day I was in my white pantsuit with my little PFC, or actually Specialist 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was a Specialist 4 then. Yeah. And I went back to the Madigan. And all the white people in white just kind of were stepping more lightly, stepping more, you know,
sure,
highly. The patients healed better, the air was cleaner, and the
mm-hmm.
sun was brighter.
Sky was bluer. Yeah.
And if you don't think it made a difference to the troops, and, you know, these right-wingers can say all they want, but, I mean, it was the greatest morale booster on earth,
mm-hmm.
Because it compromised them so much. But what I'm really calling about...
Well, wait a second. You know, as you're describing that, my God, can you imagine if George Bush got out of town, how...
Oh.
I don't think there's any man or woman in any branch of the U.S. military right now who wouldn't feel a
sure.
sense of relief.
Well, yes, and we're talking about officers, because I was on a ward of 57 men. We're talking about hardcore Rangers. We're talking about battle-hardened soldiers that were just believed in what they were doing, even though they were coming back. And, you know, it was just a time of, you know, where they were feeling funny about coming home. And we had PTSD. The guys that are coming home now, I don't, you know, we could talk about that all night, because they're going back on their third and fourth tours. And Nam, you had to beg to go back for a second.
Yeah, and 1 year in and you're gone.
Yeah, and my brother went back for a second. He didn't come back.
I'm sorry.
That's why I went in, mm-hmm. because I just, you know, I had watched that war a la Walter Cronkite from
mm-hmm.
the age of 14.
Mm-hmm.
And kids from my high school didn't come back. We had a plaque, and I knew them, and it just affected me deeply.
Do you know the rate of PTSD sufferers coming back from Iraq is going to dwarf?
Oh, it's going to dwarf it.
What
we
happened?
Haven't seen the suicides, the criminal activity.
Oh, it's just
suicide by cop, the drug abuse, the alcoholism, the wife abuse, the child abuse. These guys are goners.
Yeah.
They're going to come back, and the VA has just turn their backs. You know this Intrepid rehab place down in San Antonio?
I've heard of it, yeah.
That's such a cop-out.
Mm-hmm.
That is, they're raising private funds to give troops state-of-the-art rehab facilities. Private funds.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't the government paying for that?
Well, the government is George Bush, and the Bush crime family doesn't give a damn about soldiers.
About troops.
They just don't care. Yeah.
And I'm just... But I think George really blew it this time, and the evil one that is behind him, Carl, because on this port deal
mm-hmm.
with the UAE,
right.
they have spent 4 years being the boogeyman about fear. They pull it out of the hat anytime they want.
That's right.
And what they've done is, you know, George doesn't have much of a constituency left. You know, he doesn't appeal to a cross-section of the United States anymore. And the only people he really appeals to are bigots.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know, I just feel that the Republicans I know have very narrow thinking and are greedy.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people I know. And they put degenerate greed, the Bush administration, in front of any other thought of how this is going to appear. And Bush knows his legacy shot. So they're going to do whatever they can to build the Bush dynasty. I don't know what this is all about, except it's stupid. Because their base, all they see, they don't make any distinction between Arabs. Bush made sure they didn't make any distinction between Afghanistan and Iraq and Muslims in general.
Mm-hmm.
And their people don't think technically. You write in crayon to these people, as Mario Cuomo said. If you want to talk to these people, do it in crayon.
Yeah.
And that's what they've been doing.
Well, you know, as you use the term base in reference to Bush's ardent supporters, mm-hmm. you know, that's how the word Al-Qaeda translates.
Yeah,
the base.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. What's the difference?
Yeah,
I mean, it's control. It's do it my way. I want to control your body. I want to control everything about you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to control how you look, how you talk, I don't know. But I think this is really going to backfire on them, because what they're telling their base is, in a way, to take it to another extreme, is all of a sudden we're accepting gay marriage. Gay marriage is okay. You know,
the Bush crime family is saying that?
Yeah. To their base.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's the same as don't fear the Arabs anymore.
Yeah,
in other words, don't fear gay marriage anymore. Gay marriage
right,
is fine.
Right,
in fact,
right.
They can adopt all the children they want.
This is going to cause an awful lot of nervous breakdowns and mind snapping in the minds of these neoconservative followers of Bush. Hey, Judy, we're out of time.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
We're just out of time. Thank you. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate what you had to say. Whoa. Strange night. Thanks for participating in the program tonight, however you did that. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Watch your back. Take care. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Air America Radio.
On Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.